Now, when we meet him in this story, Moses was a nobody. Nothing to his name, life a wreck, directionless. Now, once upon a time, Moses had been somebody. He had been the adopted son of the Pharaoh of Egypt, the most powerful man in the world. The Pharaoh had vast armies to command and was surrounded always by guards, by dangerous men who would kill with just a word, who were loyal to Pharaoh alone. He too, the Pharaoh, was the wealthiest man in the world, wealth beyond imagination of the ordinary people. And Moses had grown up in the lap of luxury, knowing everything that came along with being a part of the richest family in the world. But growing up as he did so close to power, Moses too saw firsthand where all that money, where all that power, where all that came from, how it was amassed, what built it. Moses could see that it was all built upon the power of the Pharaoh to oppress people, the willingness of the Pharaoh to enslave countless people, including the Israelites. Moses himself was an Israelite. Now, by strange confluences of luck and sort of mix-up at his birth, Moses grew up in the court of Pharaoh rather than laboring in the work camps, it's true. By some strange luck, he was wealthy while his people suffered, but I think it still must have gnawed at him what happened to his people daily. I wonder whether every time he ate a lavish feast, whether the hunger of his people gnawed at him. I wonder whether every time he went through the streets accompanied by armed guards there to protect him, I wonder whether it taunted him that these same men who protected him were the ones terrorizing his own people, the Israelites. I wonder. I think it must have gnawed at him, built up. Because one day, Moses' anger exploded. His anger exploded. He saw an Egyptian beating an Israelite in public like it was nothing. And Moses' anger exploded. He attacked the Egyptian man and he killed him in broad daylight. He killed him out of anger. And it was like a spark of anger raging out at the Pharaoh, raging out at the order, the world that the Pharaoh had built. Moses' anger was like a spark. But the fire that it began was terrible. The anger of Pharaoh was like an engulfing fire that destroyed everything that Moses had known, destroyed his life as he knew it. Pharaoh sent men to kill Moses, but it was only because Moses had fled the country immediately that when they came to his home, he was not there. Moses knew that he had no chance of going up against the Pharaoh and winning. He knew that there was no hope that the Pharaoh would show him any mercy. It was only out of his terror and the face of the Pharaoh's power and mercilessness, it was only Moses' terror that allowed him to survive at all. On a dime, he left everyone and everything he had ever known behind, and he fled the country alone. Once Moses had been somebody. Now he wasn't nobody. He was out past the middle of nowhere, out past the wilderness, on a mountain in the middle of the desert, near the Red Sea of all places, guarding a flock of sheep. Not a flock of sheep he owned, by the way. He was doing this just for pay. Dreamless, penniless, directionless, not living, just surviving. And this man, whose life had been burned to a cinder by the anger of Pharaoh, this man had a vision. Moses saw a bush, just a small, ordinary, run-of-the-mill sort of plant, a bush that was enveloped by intense flames, burning, and yet it was not consumed. It was not destroyed. It was not even harmed. And so Moses turned aside and looked at this. And out of the flames, Moses heard a voice calling to him, saying, "Moses, I am your God, the God of your people, the Israelites. I have seen their suffering. I have heard their cries, and I will deliver them. And you will do something for me, Moses. You will go to Pharaoh. You will confront the Pharaoh, and you will make him let the Israelites go." Now, even if Moses believed this vision that he saw, even if he believed that this was the voice of God that he was hearing, Moses was still not capable of doing what God asked him. Go up against the Pharaoh? Moses could not go up against the Pharaoh and win. Moses had already gone up against the Pharaoh and lost. He had been rich. He had everything in the world. And then he went up against the Pharaoh and his life was destroyed. That's why he was standing here in the middle of nowhere looking after somebody else's scraggly sheep. And God is telling him, go back for round two against the Pharaoh. Moses could no more defeat the Pharaoh than he could pick up the mountain he was standing on and move it. It was impossible what God was asking him. So Moses asks what is quite a sensible question. Moses asks, "Who am I? Who am I that I should go to the Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Who am I that I should go up against the Pharaoh and win?" It is a sensible question. And it is almost the right question. Almost. But Moses is still missing something pretty crucial here. This man who had seen and understood deeply the power of human beings and what they could accomplish. Moses is concerned here because he believes that God is going to be relying on him. That freeing the Israelites will rise or fall based on what Moses is capable or incapable of doing. Moses thinks that this is his great deed to accomplish. Moses is missing something pretty crucial when he asks, "Who am I to do this?" His second question gets him just right. He asks, "Who are you, God? What is your name? Who shall I say has sent me?" This is just the right question. This is what matters in going up against the Pharaoh, not who is Moses, but who is God who has sent him? And God replies by telling Moses God's own name, a name which had never before been spoken to a human person. God replies by telling Moses God's own name, and it is the name that tells a story of the one who stood in perfect solitude, in solitude, at the dawn of eternity, the one who had no other to give God a name, who needed to name God's self. It is the name of one over whom none is greater, the name of one before whom there was nothing. God says, my name is I am who I am. Now, the tenses of this, the future, the past, the present, these get very mixed up when you're trying to translate them from Hebrew into English, and I think that is just the way it ought to be, because what God says, I am who I am, it could just as easily be translated, I will always be who I have always been. This is a name that means something like, there is no other. God's name means something like, none is greater. The great I Am says to Moses, I will be with you. When you go up against Pharaoh, you will have I Am on your side. The Pharaoh may have all the wealth in the world, but you have I Am on your side, Moses. The Pharaoh may have armies that can fill the horizon, but you will have I Am on your side, Moses, and you will know. This will be the sign for you. This will be the sign for you that it is I who am with you, because you will do things that you know that you cannot do. What will be possible for you will be the impossible itself, and you will be filled with such joy, such overflowing joy, that you will worship God on this very mountain. This will be the sign that it was I Am who sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain with overflowing joy. Now, in the story of God calling Moses, I think that we see here guidance for people of faith. In the story of God calling Moses, we see courage for those who are staring down things that they must do, things they must do that they know they cannot do, not on their own anyway. Because in ways that pass our understanding, in ways that God promises will be true but which God does not promise we will understand, in ways that God promises will be true, God will be at work alongside ordinary people as they do extraordinary things. We hear in this story that God will be at work in the person who is one day sober, who has tried and failed to leave behind an opiate habit. God is at work in the person who has tried and failed before and who cannot think of a single thing that they can do differently this time that will make it any different. God is with them. God is at work in the ordinary people who go up against the powers and principalities and pharaohs of this world, whose offices are now in towers, who think they run the world because they do. God is at work in ordinary people who declare to modern day pharaohs that you cannot do whatever you please. You cannot do whatever you please. You will be called to account, and you will be made to do what is right. God is with those who go up against the pharaohs of this world. God is with the trans teenagers around this country and around this world, who are told lies that they will never be lovely, that they will never be lovable, that their lives will never be worth anything. God is with the trans teenager who takes everything they can to get up and live another day. God is with them. God is with all of us on our deathbeds when we take the very last breath that we shall ever take as we depart from the land of the living. In all of these things and more, God is with us. And remember that when God is with us, nothing can stand against us, not anything in the world. There is no power that is greater than God. If God is with you, then the scope of what you can imagine, the scope of what you can imagine is far too small to encompass what God can do in you. Now, maybe you're saying, well, this sounds all well and good, preacher, for people who have extraordinary faith, people who have extraordinary trials, extraordinary needs. But who am I? Who am I that God should be with me? Who am I? It's a sensible question. It's a sensible question, and it's almost the right question. But we must remember, as Moses was reminded, that what matters is not who am I, but who are you, God? Who are you, God? How can we know that it is God who is with us? As it was with Moses, this will be a sign for you. This will be a sign for you that it is God who is with you. When all is said and done, when all is said and done, and when your life has turned around and you cannot recognize it for its wonder, or when the powerful have been humbled and made to do what is right, and when on your last day, when on your last day you taste death and you find it was not at all what you feared. When all is said and done, you will be overflowing with joy. Overflowing with joy, and you will worship the God whose name is I will always be who I have always been. Your name.